The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today our guest is Amy Millman, co-founder and president of Springboard Enterprises, a nonprofit venture catalyst which resources, coaches, showcases, and supports women-led companies seeking equity capital for product development and expansion. Amy, first off, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here.
Amy, let's start with your role today. What exactly is Springboard Enterprises?
We are a venture catalyst. I'll start with that. Venture catalyst means, you know, we were trying to upend the balance of what we saw was not happening for women business owners. And we decided it's time somebody acted as a Hollywood agent for women who were seeking billions and billions of dollars for their businesses. And maybe not billions, but large sums of money to be able to grow to be billion-dollar enterprises. And there weren't that many of them. So we said, you know, why aren't women playing in that field? Well, they said it's because they didn't have capital. And we said, well, where is the capital? And they said, it's over there and it's only going to men. So we said, well, how about if we make that connection? And that's how it was started.
Today, we're speaking with Amy Millman, co-founder and president of Springboard Enterprises. Amy, before we talk too much more about Springboard Enterprises, which I am so excited about talking about, that is such an incredible thing that you've done. We'll talk about it later in the show, but let's start back to the beginning. Let's talk about who Amy is. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
Well, I'm clearly a New Yorker, you know, born, bred. And, you know, it's in every little fiber of my body, which means, you know, if there's something out there that needs to be changed or rethought or whatever, you know, that's almost in our DNA. And for many, many years, I was a lobbyist in Washington, representing various industry sectors, including specifically the tobacco industry. I worked for Philip Morris for a very long time. And, you know, Philip Morris, regardless of how you feel about, you know, the product that they produce, which was, you know, tobacco, alcohol, and junk food, it was a group of people who were problem solvers and connectors. And one of the things you learn as a lobbyist is that the most important thing is building relationships and understanding the dynamics, what somebody on the other side of the table needs that you can provide, so that you build that relationship. And that's been the foundation for everything that I've done.
Wow, you have a very strong sense of self, clearly a very strong sense of understanding emotional intelligence. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your family dynamic. I mean, how did that develop in you? Was there something about your family where you grew up?
It's funny. I have absolutely no entrepreneurial background at all. There's nothing like that. As a matter of fact, I think I was pretty much of an introvert my whole entire life until I went to college. Everybody of my ilk, my friends, all stayed around New York, and I went to Pittsburgh, went to Carnegie Mellon University. And I just was someplace not in New York. And it was not in New York. And I realized at that point how interesting it was to be in a place where people thought differently, and it was very business-oriented, and engineering and business. And I got a whole nother perspective on this whole other world that operates, you know, outside of what I was comfortable with, which was, you know, get a nice job, have a nice family, grow up, you know, do all of that. All of a sudden, it was entrepreneurial. And so I think that was kind of the underpinnings of how that changed me in my approach to things. I highly recommend everybody go not only to Carnegie Mellon, but away from home to go to college and get another perspective.
So, Amy, we've interviewed lots and lots of fantastically successful women on the show, and virtually all of them, when they look back, have some either seminal person or event in their life that, you know, in retrospect, helped shape them. Did you have somebody like that, or was it your college experience?
You know, the answer to that question is not an easy one, because there are so many people who have made such an impact, positively or negatively. You know, I think about, you asked the question before about Springboard and the start of Springboard. It was a challenge that happened that really changed and really got us thinking about, you know, what we could do. A bunch of venture capitalists in Silicon Valley who said to us, there aren't any women. And if there were, that could be backed by us, that we would know them. And we said, there's 52% of the population. Come on, there got to be women, you know, who are capable of running, you know, these scalable businesses. And they said, well, we don't know them. And so we said, you know, we'll find them.
So clearly you like a fight. You don't back down for a fight at all. You like the challenge. You studied pre-law when you were at Carnegie Mellon. Did you want to be a lawyer?
I did, as a matter of fact, and I came to Washington for a semester program. And my pre-law professor, you know, sort of set me up with an internship that I was supposed to look at something, and the day was called the Hatch Act. And it prevented federal employees from participating in political activities. And it was an interesting, I won't get into all the particulars, but it was such an interesting education for me to meet all of the folks, you know, who were kind of in this field, and that got me excited about what was going on. So I couldn't wait to get back to Washington, you know, after my senior year. And I came to Washington and looked for a job. And I remember, you know, I had applied to law school, was going to go. I got a job in a law firm, big law firm here in town. And I thought, this is absolutely not what I want to be doing for the rest of my life. This is terrible. You know, there was one woman partner in a group of 200 partners, one woman, and she basically slept in her office. And I thought, I never want this to be my life. And, you know, I was 21 years old, 22 years old. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to do this. I will go and do my public administration. You know, I want to work in the federal government. I want to do something with that. And it was this moment of change that summer. And I thought, I am not going to be a lawyer. This is terrible. And it's very interesting because fast forward a bunch of years, that same law firm became our lawyers for. And so all those people that I actually worked for a very short period of time were working for me.
Wow. You know, it's so hard, 21 years old, and you have to decide, you know, what it is. And I know I have kids in that age group, and they're so serious about wanting to know what they wanted to be doing now for 15 years. Do you think young folks should have an experience like that so they can figure out really where their passion is?
Oh, I think I always tell everybody's kids when they send them to me for advice is that you should probably spend a couple of years on Capitol Hill. It was one of my favorite experiences to, you know, be there, figure out what you know, build relationships with people, you know, before you go to graduate school, before you know what you're really going to do. And it's sort of like when you're in Israel, they make you, you know, do a couple of years of service in the military. It changes everything. You get perspective. You learn about yourself.
Gap years.
And the thing about working on Capitol Hill is you find out what you're made of, and you begin to start to see what is your passion and what is your interest. And, you know, for those that actually follow that path and figure out whether or not, you know, that kind of lifestyle is for them, I think it's incredibly important. It was for me.
Was that your first job, Capitol Hill, after you worked for the law firm?
No, actually, it was right before that. That was my internship. Was working for a guy named Steve Solars, who eventually was one of the Watergate babies back in the day, and then eventually ended up running the Foreign Affairs Committee on the House side. And the interesting aspect of that is he happened to have been the godson of my uncle, which is why I ended up going to say hello to him when I came to Washington. And he was not paying attention. And he said, "Oh, good, you can walk with me to the House floor. And then I need you to go and deliver this thing." And I was saying, "Well, I don't even work for you." And he wasn't listening to me. And that was how I started working for him.
That's a great story.
So, Amy, you ended up spending more than a decade on the Hill as a lobbyist. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you worked for Philip Morris for over 10 years. That had to be a tremendously interesting time. You said, no matter what you think about their product, right? So what was that like back in the 80s as that wave of lawsuits was emerging against big tobacco and people were starting to view them as sort of the evil empire who, you know, was poisoning and maybe lying to the American public? How was it to have to represent them on the Hill?
It was a challenge. But the way I always looked at it was this. Is it if you actually were very honest and straightforward about your positioning and that you understood what the person across the table from you really cared about? So you had to do your homework. So if I walk into a member of Congress's office talking to their legislative director, I have to know what matters to them. What's the legislation that they care about? And so you build that relationship. You don't just walk into the office not knowing who the person is or not ever having seen them. I used to walk around. Actually, I was 8 months pregnant. People used to laugh at me. People still remember this. I was 8 months pregnant and huge. But I would use that as my exercise. So I'd walk around Capitol Hill and just go into office and office and introduce myself to people and just say, "Hey, listen, I just wanted to say hello. You know, I heard about you and I really like what you're doing. And I don't have anything today that, you know, I want to talk with you about." But, and I would do this every single day for, you know, I did for years. And I would always find 10 new offices that I wanted to go in and just introduce myself. So finally, after when I needed people, they were already familiar with me. And they also understood that I was interested in what they were doing. And I think that that is something that's really part of my fabric. You know, I'm a student of people. And so people know that. And so they're willing to actually have a conversation with me or listen to my point of view when I'm willing. And I also was willing to bring in people who had the other side of the argument with me. So I used to bring in a friend of mine who lobbied for the American Medical Association. You know, you might want to talk with them. They have the other side of it. You know, here are the things that we say and why we say it. It's a matter of integrity. And most of the lobbyists that I know who are really good at what they do, that's a really, really important part of their job is being honest, being straightforward, and making sure that you protect those relationships.
Today, our guest is Amy Millman, co-founder and president of Springboard Enterprises. Coming up, we'll hear how Amy turned that interest in people to women entrepreneurs. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Amy Millman, co-founder and president of Springboard Enterprises. Amy, back in 1993, during the Clinton administration, you were appointed executive director of the National Women's Business Council. Tell us about NWBC, or the National Women's Business Council, and what their mission and charter is.
The mission of the council is very special. First of all, nobody even knew that this thing existed. And I was approached. At the time, I was actually lobbying for the American Trucking Association. Lobbying axle weights and gas taxes and all of that kind of stuff, which was actually a lot of fun. But I was also sitting on the board of the Women's Campaign Fund, and a bunch of my friends from there came to me and said, you know, there's this commission that was established during the end of the Reagan administration. And it would really be wonderful to know if there are women business owners out there that actually we could build into a constituency to support women candidates. And I thought, and they said, would you like, they're looking for an executive director, you know, at the beginning of the Clinton administration, would you run this? And I thought, well, I don't know anything about women business owners. I've worked for these black hat industry sectors forever. And they said, we think that this would be a really good place, you know, to have somebody like you. And so I interviewed and realized I absolutely knew nothing about these issues. I'd never worked small business issues. I did not know anything about it. But it was fascinating to me to think that there was no coalition, no organization. The only organization that was really any visible was the National Association of Women Business Owners. And they were the ones who had been the catalyst for starting the Women's Council. And so I read everything that I could. There was, you know, testimony and all kinds of interesting things that had happened in 1988. And I thought, you know, I think I could do something to support this entrepreneur. First, you need a coalition. And so can I find out all of the women business owner organizations and bring them together? And so that was my first thing that I did at the council was, who's out there who's representing the interests of women business owners?
Do you think the mission and the work they need to do has changed drastically since 1993?
I would love to say that it did. I would love to say that it did. But honestly, when I sit at meetings, rarely these days, but when I sit at meetings, it's the same conversation. You know, access to capital, access to contracts, the education and training and research. And it's still, you know, how many years, 20 years later, still an issue for women business owners to get, you know, push that rock up a hill.
So the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome, right?
Now, the wonderful thing about this, though, is that it's different people having the conversation. In some cases, you see the same of us, you know, the same old broads having this conversation over and over and over again. But they're all these new people with new fresh ideas and new ways of tackling these challenges. And that, for me, is very exciting. And I'm happy to have them continue that conversation, not necessarily with me.
Is there any one magic lightning bolt that you think might change or move the conversation along that you can continue?
Well, what I can say is this. In my world of investment in, you know, scalable, sustainable, women-led companies, specifically in the technology area and biotechnology area, the exciting part here is, it's not a groundswell, but what we see is a lot of women beginning to invest. And when you start to see women investing in things that they believe are priorities, that's when the change happens. And it's sort of like, you know, what's happening on Capitol Hill. You know, you could stand by and sort of let, you know, the system sort of take its course, or you can stand up or sit down for what it is you believe.
So let's fast forward a bit. After 7 years running the National Women's Business Council, you, along with your co-founder, started Springboard Enterprises, mm-hmm. right? That was in 2000, you and Kay Koplovich. So what brought you to decide to do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, so Kay Koplovich we call her our unicorn. President Clinton appointed her to serve as the chair of this commission. And at the time, she was the founder, president, CEO, and chair of USA Networks Cable Television, which at that point was a $5 billion enterprise. And she had built it from her idea and the thriller from Manila, which was broadcast recently with because of the Muhammad Ali passing. And she said, we have to do something absolutely wild and crazy. What can we do to help women with access to capital? And at the time, she was sitting on the Oracle board. And Larry Ellison, the CEO of Oracle, said, how, you know, why don't we just use our facility? You guys can do a conference. And I looked at Kay and I said, the last thing in the world I want to do is another conversation. Let's do something that has an impact and result. And let's bring, you know, the challenge, as I said before, was that, you know, the investors didn't think there were any women out there. So let's pack the room with women who were going to present their companies and then have Larry Ellison bring all of his investor friends and we'll get them all funded. And actually, we did this. We thought we'd get about 50 applications from women. We got 350. We only had space for 25 companies or so, and we packed the room, and they all got funded. And this was January of 2000. And we thought, maybe we're onto something here. Let's go around the country and do this.
Of those 25 that presented and got funded, how many are still in business? Do you know?
Yeah, well, we know that out of the 627 over the last 16 years that we've worked very, very closely with, 80% of them are in business as either merged entities or their own entities, and 12 went public on listed on public exchanges.
That 80%, that's incredible. That has got to be a lot higher rate than any other venture capital out there can claim.
It is. And the thing is that what we were looking for were winners. And, you know, we didn't set out for that. We just wanted to make a statement about the fact that there were women out there. But what we found was there were incredibly brilliant women who were astronauts, PhDs that also had medical doctor degrees, chemical engineers, you know, who just didn't have access to the capital resources. And we thought, well, this is just criminal. So let's figure out how we can make those connections.
Today, our guest is Amy Millman, co-founder and president of Springboard Enterprises. So one of the programs that Springboard runs is Dolphin Tank. Mm-hmm. I saw a video of a dog in the water and the dolphin, protecting the dog from a shark. That was mm-hmm. a great video, by the way. But what is Dolphin Tank? Is it sort of like Shark Tank?
It is the anti-Shark Tank. And the reason why was because what we found was Shark Tank is entertainment. And all these pitch sessions, like boot camps, you know, they're, you know, tough and we're going to tear you apart. And the thing about entrepreneurship is that it really takes a community, or, you know, as Hillary would say, it takes a village, you know, to really build a company. You can't do it on your own. And so standing up there and getting savaged by people who, you know, say it for sport is not encouraging people who we want to basically innovate and disrupt. And so we decided, and we had been doing it from day one, is, you know, constructive feedback, actionable insights, something tangible that you can take away, and then follow through with it and say, you know, can we make, you know, the people in the room are the ones that can actually help you, and you just don't know all the resources that are at your disposal. So let's make it a community activity. Let's make it something that you can actually get encouragement as well as a tangible resource that you could actually help, you know, take and grow your company with.
I've been at 4 startups or companies now. 3 of them are very large. But having a very supportive board, having them as mm-hmm. being your mentor, your ally, makes the difference between success and not. Mm-hmm. I loved your video and the fact that at the end, where the dog has got thrown off a boat, and I'll give you the visualization of it, and sharks are starting to surround, and the dolphin stops the shark from, you know, butts the shark and makes him away, and then gives the dog a ride to safety. Having that kind of support and mentorship can make the difference between somebody mm-hmm. being successful and not. Do you have, expertise in available within the Dolphin Tank to help support these companies, to help provide them with operational mm-hmm. excellence on how to run a company? You know, like you said, a PhD who also has a medical degree may not know how to run a balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
So do you offer those kind of support services to women that might be interested in, you know, approaching Dolphin Tank?
Yeah, we're just a big tent network. And we have expertise in just about every aspect of running a business, if industry sectors, support. The only thing that people need to do is ask.
So how do they ask? How do they apply to Dolphin Tank? If you're a woman out there, you have this genius idea, but you can't get the funding, and we know that the numbers are still in less than 10% for women out there to find funding. So how do they get in touch with you?
Well, there's so many myriad ways. We have partnerships and relationships with just about every organization, academic institution. So I'm leaving tomorrow for South Africa, where Dell every year brings 150 women business owners from around the world to some place in the world, and we'll do a Dolphin Tank there. And the purpose is sort of a double bottom line thing. One is to get four or five companies that are going to be in attendance to stand up there and talk about their opportunities and their challenges. And then the second part of it is to create community around that. So the rest of the people in the room saying, oh, I can help you enter that market, or I know a good manufacturer, or the Dell people basically saying, you know, we can solve your problem. We have a solution for that. And, you know, how many times can you ask? You just don't know who to ask. For the most part, you know, we try to go where the women are and create an opportunity.
Today, our guest is Amy Mohman, co-founder and president of Springboard Enterprises. Coming up, we'll ask Amy about mentoring. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Amy Millman, co-founder and president of Springboard Enterprises.
So, Amy, I know that you've long been a proponent of mentoring, right? Your Springboard is all about mentoring. But tell us why mentoring is important to you. Have you had important mentors in your career?
I have a real problem with the word mentor. Mentor is a very passive, you know, it means that I am providing, you know, my expertise or whatever to somebody else. But it's not, but I see this whole process as a give and take. And we call it coaching, actually, at Springboard. And somebody else said to me the other day, it's really sponsoring. It's a very interesting thing that law firms have done in the past several years is they've required their partners to sponsor their young associates. And that means you're responsible. It's not just you're giving something voluntarily. You're responsible for their success. And on the other end of it, I see that it's also a responsibility of the people who are accepting that coaching or that advice to be able to offer something of value back. And so that's the proposition at Springboard. It's we find the companies that we feel we can help. We put them together with a team of advisors that will work with them over time. And sometimes it goes on for years. And the idea is there's a relevant connection. There's a reason, a vested interest, a reason for them to be together. That something is important for all of them to know about each other and to help each other. And that goes for the entrepreneur as well.
We've asked that question of other women, and they often will tell us that they get as much out of a mentor relationship
Absolutely.
As the mentee. And you can tell they're serious about that. They're not just saying that to be nice, but they really feel like it's as beneficial to them as it is to the person that they're mentoring.
Many of our coaches have actually become investors, become board members, and what we're finding more recently is that a lot of our alumna are actually very engaged with all of this in doing business relationships with the new crop of entrepreneurs that come through. And that to me is, you know, the gold standard.
Sounds like they're giving back.
You know, we kind of look at it as not necessarily giving back, but engaging. Again, this whole idea of women investing in each other because it makes sense for wealth and influence.
Do you think that there's an invisible barrier preventing women from reaching their highest goals for their career or in starting a business out there versus a man?
No. And the reason why is because the only barrier that's really there is our reluctance to take a leap. You know, one of our entrepreneurs, Mae Jemison, Dr. Mae Jemison, talks about radical leaps. And her radical leaps are that she is heading an initiative called 100-Year Starship. How do we get to another solar system in the next 100 years? And when she first proposed this, or when actually it was a DARPA idea, and they gave the award to her to start this infrastructure to support this, she said, and it covers the entire world, and it's all about diversity and inclusion and engaging not the usual suspects in figuring out what we need to know and what we need to build in order to get there. And I thought, all right, well, how do we do this in baby steps? You know, how do we look at this? And she says, Amy, it's all about radical leaps. And if we don't think that way, that, you know, we're not going to get anywhere. And we're only held back by our vision for what radical leaps mean to us.
So I don't disagree with you. I believe in the power of belief. I believe in the power of women and people in general getting together and helping as a community to make a difference. However, when you start looking at the facts, you know, women are paid much less than men in just about every industry. And, you know, you and I are about the same age. At this point, I would have guessed it wouldn't be still where it was in the 1980s, where it reports that women earn 78 cents to every dollar a man makes. You know, radical leaps, maybe there's radical things that have to happen. What do you believe those radical things need to be to make a difference?
I honestly believe in the power of women to promote other women and support other women. And I think in the past, we weren't in a position of influence and support to be able to do that. Yes, socially and personally, we do that for each other. But people, you know, in the investment world, I can speak to that. In the investment world, people who are investors invest in things they know and that they relate to. And for the most part, they invest in themselves. And the way they invest in themselves is by people that look and feel and act and speak like them. And women don't, and for the most part, 95% of the investors are men. And so if they're investing in what they know and what looks like them, they're not investing in women. And the only way that that changes is if women begin to be the investors. To know that that is an important part. It's not just the volunteer part, but it's the financial investment in people who are doing things that change lives that are important to us. And we're beginning to see that change. And until we actually see sort of a critical mass of women investing in those initiatives that change women's lives, women's and family lives, we're not going to see those radical leaps.
So I agree with you. However, you said something very important, two things. First off, your success with women, you have 80% success rate, so we know this is a good investment. Mm-hmm. However, the majority of investors are men. OMB released a report earlier last year, which basically showed that the amount of women who are in the C-suite in the government is much higher. It's astronomically higher. It's like, you know, 40% of SESers. Now, it's still not where it should be at 52%, mm-hmm. but it's much higher. And when you really peel back the onion a little bit, the process of getting promoted in the military or in the government is very well defined. There's less soft criteria for getting a promotion. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a way that we could do that from an investment perspective that would help women, you know, would that make a difference?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Back in the 90s, we started a program, part of the SBIC, Small Business Innovative, Investment Company Program, which doesn't exist right now, or at least that part of it doesn't exist, to look at, quote unquote, emerging managers, you know, women new ones into the market that had some expertise to be able to raise a fund that would then invest in women. And there were four of these entities that were funded. And of course, it was at a time where the market was exciting and this was the end of the 90s, and then the market crashed. And so the track record for them was not impressive. And so they ended the program because the government wasn't seeing a return on investment significantly for this. Well, that stalled the progress of women investing in other women and women being in the forefront because they needed a match. They needed government support and promotion for those things because they were the new entrants into the market.
Amy, let me shift gears just a bit here to back to a career, your career, and something you said earlier. In her book, Lean In, Sheryl Sandberg says that your career doesn't have to be a straight line. It can be a jungle gym. And when I was kind of researching your background for this, yours certainly appears to be a jungle gym, right? From pre-law to Capitol Hill as a lobbyist to working in the Clinton administration to starting Springboard. We know from talking to young people, particularly the millennials, that they believe that they have to have their career all mapped out. What advice? You've taken a lot of leaps in your career. You talked about when you started the executive director of the Women's Business Council, right? That you didn't know anything about that before you got into it. What advice would you give to somebody starting out about their career and this whole aspect of should it be planned or should you kind of find your way as you go?
Maybe it's because of the environment that I work in these days, and I do work with a lot of very young college students. We sit on our organization sits on the campus, on the George Washington University campus, and so I get a lot of students working with me all the time. I do see that they're very stressed about their futures and where things go, but I don't feel that they actually have bought into that I need to map out my future. I think they have absolutely no idea, and I understand in the entrepreneurial world, there are no guarantees. There are no safety nets. I always say that the women that we work with are diving off cliffs with no safety net. And I wonder, from my life, I did try to map out my future. I figured I was going to have a job for 30 years and then retire. Well, that didn't happen. But I think now more than ever, somebody said, there used to be you'd have one job and then, years next generation, it was you'd have three jobs in your life. The next generation, you'd have 10. Now, you're going to have a job every year or less. And that's what I'm seeing on resumes now. And I think that it's really important for people to embrace that uncertainty and say, what is it that I know about myself and what I want to do? And what's the next thing that I think will help me as I begin to develop a career or area of expertise that is marketable?
Today, our guest is Amy Millman, co-founder and president of Springboard Enterprises. Coming up, we'll ask Amy how she deals with work-life balance. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Amy Millman, co-founder and president of Springboard Enterprises.
So, Amy, I'm going to ask you the dreaded work-life balance question. But the truth of it is that, you've had a fantastically successful career. You have two children. And, with all the competing priorities in our lives, we're always faced with making difficult choices. And sometimes those choices, will change our route or dampen our success or delay something or send us in a different direction. So, have you, in balancing your life and your family and your career, did you encounter any obstacles or rocks that you had to climb over or around?
The only thing that actually comes to mind in this process is when I had my first child, my daughter, China. And of course, when you have your first kid, you absolutely have no idea what this process is like. You think if I could just get this baby out of me, everything is going to be back to normal. And nothing is back to normal.
Yeah, that is
then.
Truly the definition of the new normal, right?
Changes your entire perspective on every single thing that happens in your life. The thing is, though, that I wasn't really the greatest mother candidate. So organization and managing things and focusing on that aspect of life was never my thing. And so I could not wait to get back to work. And so, you know, I took my requisite 6 weeks and then, you know, appeared back at work, ready to get everything started again, you know, hired the nanny, had the whole thing, the kid was fine. You know, I don't think I even called that first day that I left, which actually freaked the nanny out completely. You know, that wasn't I concerned? No, I was back at work, you know, it was starting again. But I'd been out for 6 weeks and they had sort of moved in and taken over the stuff that I was working on and, you know, had adapted with me not being there. So, you know, I had to go fight again for my turf at my place. It took a really long time. And I realized that, you know, you have to think about all of this. You know, everybody is always focused on themselves. But if you look at this in terms of the landscape, you know, people aren't as concerned about you as you are about yourself. So you have to plan that out and you have to think about that. And so what is the most important thing for you? And for me, the most important thing was everything. How do I manage all of that and how to make sure that everybody is aware of the things that are important to me and what I'm going to contribute?
So, Amy, in listening to you today, and we're coming to the close of the show, you have got me jazzed. I believe that you can go start, but you said something very key when I asked you the question, how do I get started? If I was out there, a woman out there listening, who wants to start a company, wants to approach Dolphin Tank, you basically said networking. So networking is key to success. Washington, D.C. is all about networking. So what advice do you have about networking or what resources out there you might have for a woman who wants to start a business?
There are so many resources everywhere. And the problem is that we don't know which one to pick. There are a billion different pitch sessions. There are training, there are education, there's free sources, there are expensive resources. The thing is that we all spend our time trying to analyze which ones are the better ones rather than trying them out. And so it's what I always say, you know, life is not a spectator sport. You know, you got to get out there and you've got to participate. And I think that many times we don't see women out there participating because they're not sure whether or not they're ready or there is this thing that's really the best place and they don't have a whole lot of time. So so you get a room full of men and they're getting the benefit of the connections and the input and the experience and the women are waiting. And so I'm always standing behind all the women and pushing them into the room and pushing them up to the stage.
You know, Amy, I think that's a critical point. You know, I now at this point in my career, I have a real passion around helping young women. But the truth of it is, when I was that young woman and raising my family of four children, and Aileen had four children, I had no time for networking events. It was all I could do to put in the time I needed to put in at work, because my career, like yours, was very important, and then to go home and have the time with my family. So do you have any ideas, or is Springboard doing anything to somehow shape those events that they are accommodating and attractive to young women who are so short of time, and that's their like number one commodity?
Well, one of the things that was amazing to me was that how many of the women that we were working with were birthing babies at the same time. So birthing businesses, birthing babies. I had a wall of babies from our alumna. They would bring their children to these events. It was all part of the whole experience. You know, it's the Angelina Jolie thing. These kids are coming with me. They're a part of my experience. We had babies at every single thing we did. And sometimes, you know, in places where we needed their approach, we, you know, we made sure that there was somebody around there who would be watching the children. And I think that it's all a part of your experience. It's a whole. It's not segmented out. Our lives aren't segmented out. And whereas my husband, everything is basically in silos. For me, it's all it's a 360 engagement. And so I want people to look at that, saying, what are your priorities? What are the things? How do you make it happen? And how do you, as my friend Laura Henderson used to say, you know, the secret to her success is hiring help.
I've really enjoyed today. I hate to close end our show, but I have to ask you a question. If you were to go back to your younger self, Amy, right when you were coming to DC, what advice would you like her to have this level of success that you have both in your personal and your professional life?
There are so many things that you could actually think of in that way. But the way I look at it, and my whole entire theory these days is add a zero. People really have to think about that. You know, in the business world, adding a zero for women means being relevant and being, you know, the kind of person that somebody feels thinks big and looks like somebody I want to invest in or that I'm going to make money off of. Sometimes women undersell. And so when I say, you know, add a zero, I mean, don't undersell yourself. Really think big. Think beyond what you think you can do. Don't be just good, be great. And I think that a lot of times women second guess themselves and they're not really thinking about what they could do. You know, so if you have somebody offered you $1 million, what would you do with it? What would that enable you to do? And so I always say it's not $100,000, it's $1 million, add a zero.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest has been Amy Millman, co-founder and president of Springboard Enterprises. Amy, I just want to thank you so much for sharing your incredible journey with us today.
You guys were so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.